Good morning. Glad you are here. Welcome online. We are glad you are here as well. We're wrapping up the last week of this series, You Got Mail, as we've looked at these four really, really short letters that are tucked away kind of in the back of our New Testament. I brought something really dear and special to me that I wanted to show you this morning. This is kind of a lifetime of work and things that I've accomplished, and so not wanting to brag or anything, but just so the first one, when I was 13, I was an all-star in Little League. And I'll just say that year launched, catapulted a very meteoric high school and college baseball career that ended so well that people didn't really even notice. But it was greatness, just so you know. I was voted the best stakes in East Texas by a committee, unanimous decision. You might ask who the committee was. It was by the number one food critic in East Texas, me. Unanimous decision. But my stakes are amazing, just so you know. I'm not sure if you're aware, but I have a Master's of Divinity. And I was pretty sure that once I walked across the stage and I received my hood, that my wife would begin addressing me as master. Or, oh, divine one. That has not happened yet. But I am still hopeful. This GOAT award was from my days in youth ministry. And I remember walking around the building at times when no one was there, just thinking to myself, do you know how lucky these kids in this church are to have me? They would be lost without me. So that, and Ben, it's probably getting pretty close to time to pass that on to you. Not yet, though. I want this to stay in my office a little bit longer. Because it's not like I went out and bought all these on Amazon. These were really awarded to me. Father of the Year. Yes. This takes me back. This was the year that I coached Kaylee, Caleb, and Ryan all in the same season while serving on the Little League board and won two Rose Capital East League championships. Hold for applause. And was the coach of the All-Star team. Now, and it was all about my kids. Not at all about me. And then, this one, it makes me a little nervous to even talk about this one. Because 50% of the room is guys. But I was voted Husband of the Year. I know. Because I'm pretty good about cleaning up the house. I cook dinner a lot of nights. Now you might say that's responsibility, shared responsibility. And you could say, well, my wife's the taxi driver. She's the keeper of the schedule, the laundry terminator, whatever you want to say. And you might say that's shared responsibility. You're supposed to do that. But I'm pretty special in that regard. And I would just assume that she's pretty lucky to have me. That's why I won the award. And then, my favorite of all. Last year, 2025, my wife named me a trophy husband. Yes. I know. These awards are pretty special to me because this is the culmination of my life. And it's what people really need to know about me. And you can say, those are kind of ridiculous. They're just made up. And I would say, just based on my undergraduate degree in psychology, that that is a defense mechanism that you're using to still make yourself feel okay. But the problem with this trophy case is these are all of the times in my life I wanted to be first. Not faithful, but first. And the problem is this trophy case isn't just something on stage. It lives in every human heart. And you see this pop up every single day. You see it in the boardroom. You see it in the classroom. You see it on the athletic field. You see it in the bedroom. You see it in families. You see it in me. And my assumption is that we see it in you as well. And as public as this is, most of the time it's hidden in our lives in really subtle and simple ways. John is writing this letter in essence to address this problem that's not really hidden now. It's become very public. And it's something that everyone sees. And the problem is it's worked its way into a church and it is wreaking havoc on the church. Now, the good news this morning is that ego in churches is something we really don't have to deal with today anymore because people are different now. But if you could imagine for just a second that ego worked its way into a church and the desire to be first, not faithful, began to lead. John is addressing a very real problem with a very real person. And he says this, I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to be first. Think about egocentric ambition. He loves to be first. And when we put ourselves first, we put the gospel last. When we put ourselves first, we put the gospel last. And you can ask, okay, so what does pride look like? What does it look like when it shows up in the church? It's the need for credit. It's needing recognition, to be seen, to be known. It's needing my opinion and my way to win. It's needing to be right in every single conversation. It's needing to be in control so that I feel secure. But as I said, the problem is when we put ourselves first, we put the gospel last. And so this power struggle that is happening in the church is not about theology. It's about ego. And the heart of the problem is the heart. It's a heart that's lost its way, that's lost its bearing, that's forgotten what is the most important. And what happens as we mature, I think pride disguises itself better. We get so good at hiding the pride, but yet it still comes out. It disguises itself as conviction, as leadership, as protecting what matters. But it's not about what's best for the body. It's about being seen. It's about being known. It's about being the most important person in the room. And it will devastate a church. As I said, this is not a personality problem. This is a heart problem. And it is at the core of what he is addressing. It is an enduring attitude of pride. And so he writes to this church because Diotrephes loves to be first. And then it says, he will not welcome us. So when I come, I will call attention to what he's doing, spreading malicious nonsense about us. Not satisfied with that, he even refuses to welcome the other believers. He also stops those who want to do so and puts them out of the church. And the pride is slowing the church. And it's causing problems. And it shows up in several different ways. There are four of them, actually. One, it suppresses the truth. So one of the things he addresses is this, basically what he says, a lost letter. That he sent a letter to Diotrephes, just basically saying, hey, there are some missionaries, some itinerant preachers that are going to come to you, and I want you and this body to show them hospitality. Welcome them into your church. Welcome them into your homes. And Diotrephes takes this letter and basically says, they don't need to hear this. Think about the audacity for John to write a letter, a man who was with Jesus, an apostle, sends a letter to the church, and a leader says, you know what? You don't really need to hear from him because you have me. I am in control. I am in charge. And you don't need to worry about what he says. Because pride will silence truth if truth threatens control. Pride will silence truth if truth threatens control. The second thing is this attack on people. John calls it malicious gossip. Basically talking nonsense, saying that what they are doing is evil and you should not listen to them. Third, rejecting the mission. He's refusing hospitality. So there are these people that John has said, these missionaries that are going to come to you. And I want you to receive them, to welcome them in and make them feel at home. Show them hospitality. And he refuses to do so. Refuses to welcome them. And then fourth, he starts to remove the opposition. And he does so by weaponizing the church. He goes to his church and basically says, if you welcome them, if you listen to John, if you're a part of what they're doing, I am going to kick you out of the church. He's taking people who are trying to do what is good and what is right, what it looks like to follow Jesus and show hospitality to people, and he's punishing them for it. Because pride will sacrifice people to protect position. Now, my guess is you hear this and think, what does this 2,000-year-old letter have to do with you and I? And here's the truth. Anytime our need for control becomes greater than our desire to be faithful, we are walking the same road. When our desire to be first, when our desire to have control is greater than our desire to be faithful to the calling of Jesus, we are walking the same road as the Diotrephes. And as I said, this problem, it lives in me. But this problem also, I would assume, lives in you. It's something all of us struggle with. It is the desire to be known, the desire to be seen, to stand out, to not just be a face in the crowd, but to be noticed, to matter. And at times, we allow that desire, and as corny as it looks, we allow that desire to supersede our calling to follow Jesus and to be faithful to Him. See, the temptation wasn't just about Him. This is about us. This isn't just His story. This is a human story. And as I said, we see it every single day in boardrooms, in classrooms, on the athletic fields. We see it in bedrooms. We see it in families. We see it in you. We see it in me. Because the spirit of Diotrephes lives in every human heart. So there is within this story, though, a character contrast. Because there are three main people that John mentions in this letter. The first he addresses the letter to, a man he calls a friend, and his name is Gaius. He says in verse 3, "It gave me great joy when some believers came and testified about your faithfulness to the truth, telling how you continue to walk in it." And then the other name that he mentions is in verse 12, Demetrius. Demetrius is well spoken of by everyone, and even by the truth itself. We also speak well of him, and you know that our testimony is true. So you have this character contrast. You have Diotrephes, who loves to be first, who wants to be noticed, who wants to be seen. You have Gaius, who walks in the truth. You see this sense of humility. You have Demetrius, who is well spoken of. He's trustworthy. And there's something fascinating about each of these individuals. Because you have Gaius and Demetrius, and they are in the business of building others up. They are in the business of building bridges to Jesus. They are in the business of being an open door. But Diotrephes, regardless of what he intends, what he's doing is tearing others down. What he's doing is allowing his pride to become malicious accusations. What he's doing is acting as a locked door where people cannot come to Jesus, where he's shutting them out. See, and here's the thing, is I don't think that's ever our intention. I don't think any single person who allows ego to become the center of their world and really trying, I think a lot of times they really are trying to help. But they've forgotten, and we forget, that most important person in the equation and building the kingdom of God is not you and me. We are simply interchangeable pieces. Right? If I decided to walk away today, I promise you God can find someone who will do this better than I can. But yet sometimes we allow that ego to become so inflated that we begin to think this is all about me. God can do far more for his kingdom and the church than you could ever do. And he didn't call you to be the leader, as we said last week. He didn't call me to be a leader. He called all of us to be followers and to allow his Spirit to flow out of our life in such a way that we can say, as Paul says, I want you to follow me as I follow Christ. That is not Paul saying, look at how great I am. I think that's the opposite. I think Paul is saying, I have nothing else to offer you except that I'm following Jesus and just try to do what I'm doing because I'm trying to do what he does. This realization that the kingdom is not built on me and the kingdom is not built on you. But the beauty is that God still invites you and I to play a part. A small part, but a part nonetheless. To join him in his redemption and his renewal of all things. We see this quiet faithfulness from two men that are building bridges to Jesus. He says this in verse 11. Dear friends, do not imitate what is evil, but what is good. Anyone who does what is good is from God, but anyone who does what is evil has not seen God. Right, and that's that subtle little dig there at Diotrephes. Because of what he's doing, friends, it looks like he's never seen God. Because the God we follow is the God of self-sacrificial love. And to follow him means you and I, we take all of our trophies, as important as we think they are, as great as they think we are, as great as we all think they are, and just say they simply don't really matter. Because it's not about me, and it's not about you. It is simply about Jesus. And when we put ourselves first, we put the gospel last. So the question, what are you known for? Are you known for building people up? For building bridges to Jesus? Are you known for tearing others down? Are you known for creating locked doors so that people cannot come to him? Because I'm afraid what's happened so much in our culture today is we've traded tables for platforms. And sometimes those platforms aren't literal platforms standing here. Sometimes they're on Facebook. Sometimes they're on Instagram. We put our best self out there for the world to see. We put the picture of our family smiling as the kids are heading off to the first day of school. We don't put day 58 when the parents are losing their mind, pulling their hair out, yelling at their children, "Get out the door!" Not me. Other people that I've heard of. We never put that on social media. We put the highlight show. We put the perfect family that everyone needs to see. Because we've traded tables for platforms. And Jesus built the kingdom of God around tables. Yes, he used platforms, but it was the table. It was coming together and breaking bread and sharing in fellowship with one another that built the kingdom. When I was in high school, there were four adults at our church that meant the world to me. Brian and Toya Crisp and Carrie and Tracy McElroy. You'll probably never see them on the news. I doubt any, maybe a few of you know who they are. But every single Wednesday night for 2 years, they opened their home to a group of high school students. And we showed up week after week, sat in their home, sat around the table. We talked about life, and we talked about following Jesus. And when I walked in their door, I felt known, I felt seen, and I felt like I mattered. And I would say a huge reason that I am in ministry today is because of the impact they had on my life. They weren't on staff, they didn't have kids in the youth group. They simply loved us and opened their door. We have an opportunity every single day to make that impact in the lives of people around us. If we would simply open our eyes and see the people around us as Jesus sees them. The promise in the verse this week is from Galatians 6, verse 9. And he says to us, can you put it on the screen, Marsh? Thank you. Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Here's what I want to challenge you with this week. Could you imagine if we as a church made it our goal to outdo each other in doing good? Not so that we have another trophy to add to our collection, but we tried to outdo each other in doing good for others in a way that magnified Jesus to this world. All you see around you, it seems like, is negative. but every once in a while, you see or hear a powerful story where someone showed someone else compassion. And what does it do? It moves you. Sometimes it moves you to tears. Because the world is looking for it. The world is hopeful that it will come. And that is the purpose of the kingdom of God. It is the renewal and the restoration of all things. Jesus says, I am coming to make everything new. And you and I get to partner with him in that purpose in this world. This is not about me. This is not about you. This is simply about Jesus. Jesus.